Ideas and ways of thinking are kind of like paths in the wood. When we explore them often, they are well-worn, well-defined, and we know them. But often, we get lost exploring other ideas or focused on something that we hope to see in the future, and even the paths we know well get ignored, and the brush starts to creep back in. The noise of the world begins to obscure what was once an obvious truth. This is why it is good to refresh important ideas from time to time, to walk those paths again, to remind ourselves of the perspectives that got us here. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a great one today. If you have not heard, if you have not read or heard Stop and Decrypt's old pieces that we've covered on this show, there's one on Ethereum, there's one on Bitcoin and software reliability that I rebooted sometime last year, which is always a good one. And honestly, I thought about even rebooting that one a second time just because it is so relevant to a lot of the discussion that's happening today with, the great script restoration conversations happening and OpCat and CTV and all of these things, is trying to make sense of how we should think about these changes, at least in my opinion and in the opinion of a lot of the people that I read and respect, and think they have their finger on the pulse of why and how this survives, like why this thing even works to begin with. And Stop and Decrypt has always done such a good job. Grisha as well. I've always loved the Bitcoin is worse is better. Philosophy, but I wanted to reboot this piece in particular. And the reason I'm doing a reboot, by the way, is because I've been traveling a lot in the last 2 weeks, and I have barely been able to get any episodes in. So I was essentially like a week and a half ahead. Very, very happy with myself staying ahead of the game, and now I am back to like on the day recording. So until I get back home and get back in the studio and really pump out a lot of stuff, I wanted to bring back one that I thought just had an incredibly important message and just very dense with a mindset that I think is really powerful to understand, to just remind us why this thing works, why this thing is so unbelievably valuable, and why a lot of the things that we aim for and we talk about are actually consequences of what makes this thing so valuable. They are things that are possible because of what makes this thing so valuable, not the thing itself. I want to give a quick shout out to CoinKite and Swan Bitcoin for supporting this show, and also for just being, like, I've been buying Bitcoin with Swan for an extremely long time, and I have been using the cold card from CoinKite to keep that Bitcoin safe. Also, for an incredibly long time, I use and recommend both of these services, the hardware wallets, the products, whether or not they are supporting the show, because they are tools and services that I use and I value them. And honestly, without them, I would not be able to keep doing this show. So they also help me do what I love. So check out the links in the show notes. There's a discount code. And on Swan, the next $10,000 worth of Bitcoin you buy has no fees at all. Check it out. So it's time to dive into one of the best pieces that we have covered on this show, I think, for the philosophy of Bitcoin, in my opinion, and a real blast from the past. This was Read 283. So it was a minute and a half ago. And if you have not heard it, you are missing out no longer, because we are going to get right into it. And it's titled, Bitcoin Miners Beware, Invalid blocks need not apply. Bitcoin is an impenetrable fortress of validation. By Stop and Decrypt. Like my Moore's Law article, this is an excerpt from a much larger article. It's good enough to serve as a standalone piece because the misconception this aims to put to rest is a commonly raised one that becomes annoyingly repetitive. Understanding the Bitcoin network without math. Bitcoin is more than just a chain of blocks. I want to help you understand how Bitcoin's blockchain network is designed because it'll help you fill in some gaps as you begin to acquire more knowledge in this field. I say blockchain network because Bitcoin also has a payment channel network, Lightning, layered on top of it that doesn't affect the structure of the blockchain network. I won't be discussing Bitcoin's Lightning Network in this article, though, as it's not that relevant to the points I'll make. Below is a rough example of the Bitcoin network scaled down to 1,000 fully validating nodes. There's really around 115,000 nodes currently. Each node here has 8 connections to other nodes, because this is a default amount of connections the client makes without any changes made to it. My node is in here somewhere, and if you're running one, it's in there too. Coinbase's nodes are in there, Bitmain's nodes are in there, and if Satoshi is still around, Satoshi's node is in there too. Please note that this is just a diagram, and that the real network topology can and probably does vary from this. Some nodes have more than the default amount of connections, while others may opt to connect to a limited number, or stay behind just one other node. There's no way to know what it actually looks like because it's designed with privacy in mind. Although some monitoring companies certainly try to get very close approximations, and nodes can routinely change who their peers are. You should definitely go to the article and actually check out the graphics because they're key to vision. They make understanding this so much simpler. Just imagine essentially a giant ball, a planet of nodes that are all interconnected to each other. And that's essentially the base graphic that we're starting from here. I started with that diagram because I want you to understand that there are no differences in these nodes because they all fully validate. This means they all check the entire chain to make sure each and every transaction and block follow the rules. This will prove to be important as I explain further. The ones on the inside are no different than the ones on the outside. They all have the same amount of connections. When you start up a brand new node, it finds peers and becomes one of the hive. The longest distance in this graph from any of these nodes to another is 6. In real life, there are some deviations to this distance because finding new peers isn't a perfectly automated process that distributes everyone evenly. But generally, adding more nodes to the network doesn't change this. There are 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and in 6 hops, my transaction is in the hands of almost every node, if it's valid. I'm going to select my node from this group and drag it out so I can demonstrate what happens when I create a transaction and announce it to the network. Below, you'll see my node all the way to the right, and then you'll see the 8 other nodes or peers that mine is connected to. When I create a transaction and, quote, send it out to the world, it's actually only going to these 8 peers. Since Bitcoin is designed from the ground up to make every node a fully validating node, when these 8 nodes receive my transaction, they check to see if it's valid before sending it out to their 8 peers. If my transaction is invalid, it will never break the surface of the network. My peers will never send that bad transaction to their peers. They actually don't even know that I created the transaction. There's no way for them to tell, and they treat all data as equal. But if I were to keep sending invalid transactions to any of my 8 peers, they would all eventually block me. This is done by them automatically to prevent me from spamming my connection to them. No matter who you are or how big your company is, your transaction won't propagate if it's invalid. Now let's say you're not running a full node, but you're using a light client instead. Various light clients exist for the desktop, and for your mobile phone, some of them are Electrum, Armory, Bread, and Samurai Wallet. Light clients tether to a specific node. Some can be set up to change the one they connect to over time, but they are still ultimately tethered. This is what tethering looks like. And here the graphic just shows the large pool of the Bitcoin network nodes and shows blue nodes basically out to the side. They're all connected to a single validating node within the network. I want you to note that this is just a diagram, and it's easy to demonstrate tethering using a node that happens to be on the rim, but there is no real rim. The tethering is tethering, wherever that node happens to be within this diagram. I've highlighted this in yellow. The nodes being tethered to are green, and the blue dots are light clients. All information going to or coming from the light client goes through the node they are tethered to. They depend on that node. They are not part of the network. They are not nodes. Here's where it gets fun, and where other people try to misrepresent how the network actually works. What if I wanted to start mining? Mining a block is the act of creating a block. Much like a transaction you want to send, you must create the block and announce it to the network. Any node can announce a new block. There's nothing special about that process. You just need a new block. Mining has gotten increasingly difficult, but if you want, you can purchase specialized hardware and connect it to your personal node. Remember that bit about invalid transactions? Same goes for blocks, but you need to understand something very specific about how blocks are created. First, watch this video. I skipped to the important part about hashing, using nonces, or random value, and appending the chain with that new block header. When you get to the following part in the video where the labels previous hash are applied, those are the block headers. What's not mentioned in this video is you can create valid block headers even if all the transactions inside the block are invalid. It still requires the same amount of time to mine blocks with invalid transactions as it does to mine a block with valid transactions. The incentive to spend all that time and energy creating such a block would be to push through a transaction that rewards you with Bitcoin that aren't yours. This is why it's important that all nodes check not just the block headers, but the transactions as well. This is what stops miners from spending that time, because all nodes check. No miners can cheat the system. If all nodes didn't check, you'd have to rely on the ones that do check. This would separate nodes into types, and the only type that would matter would be the ones that check. So what if you join a mining pool? Well, you might do this because mining is too difficult for you to do alone, or if you're a slightly larger entity, you might prefer a steady income as opposed to a sporadic one. Many miners do this, and they connected their specialized hardware directly to a mining pool using an entirely different protocol called the Stratum Mining Protocol. Just like creating a transaction with your non-node cell phone, you don't have to run a node to connect your hardware to a mining pool. You can mine without running a node, and many miners do exactly that. Here's what that looks like below in blue. I've used Slush Pool for this example. In the graphic, he's pulled the Slush Pool node out of the network just so that you can see it, and shown basically that a lot of varied miners from, you know, all over the place are actually just piggybacking off of this single node that Slush Pool is running. Remember, I dragged these pool run nodes out of the diagram for demonstration purposes. Just like any other node, these pool run nodes need peers. They need peers to receive transactions in blocks, and they need peers to announce blocks that they create. Allow me to reiterate again. All nodes validate all blocks and all transactions. If any of these pools announce an invalid block, their peers will know because they fully validate and they won't send it to other nodes. Just like transactions, invalid blocks do not enter the network. Here's another way to look at this without pulling these nodes out from the diagram. Below is a private miner who doesn't want to be known. It has 8 random peers, and none of those peers knows that it's a miner. Again, this is intentionally designed this way for privacy reasons. There is no way for any node in the network to know that the block they received was created by that peer or relayed by that peer. All they know is if it's valid or not. And if it is, they send it along. If it's not, they don't. In this graphic, he's just placed the miner back in the middle of the entire network and shows that the 8 random nodes that they are connected to will obviously reject any block or transaction that's invalid coming from this node. And from the standpoint of the other nodes, it looks and behaves no differently than any other. Hopefully you're getting the picture, and I don't believe I used any fancy math or equations to get here. I'd like to move on because I feel like this is complete coverage, but there is one final thing I'd like to address because it's this final aspect that is used to confuse others who don't fully understand everything I just explained. It's so rampantly used that I need to address it. Tweet by Stop and Decrypt. You're basically making a subnet for Electrum and Bread SPV clients to send headers around and calling them part of the Bitcoin network. They aren't doing anything. Vitalik. The only node whose rejection has any direct bearing on the rest of the network is a miner or validator. The system is secure against up to 33 to 50% attacks on the validating layer. End tweet. My original comment was talking about light clients, also called SPV clients, and how they aren't part of the network. I demonstrated this above with the blue tethered dots. His follow-up comment tries to imply that nodes that mine are the only nodes whose rejection matters. Remember, nodes have no way of knowing which other nodes mined a block versus who relayed a block. This was designed intentionally. Now for a final diagram, so I can try and explain the logic that's used when people say only mining nodes matter. Some miners connect directly to other miners so that out of their peer list with the network, some of them are also other miners. Not all miners do this. Some of these miners that connect directly also use optional relay networks like the Fiber network being designed by Bitcoin Core developer Matt Corallo. But even this side network isn't exclusive to miners. Anyone can join, including you or me, and it's just there to help block relay across the network. Either way, people try to argue that this interconnectivity of nodes that mine, whether using something like Fiber or not, implies that they're the only ones that matter, and it's absurd. And in this graphic, he's just pulled some of the miners out of the network to show that some of them are connected to each other directly, some are connected to the Fiber network, and circled them in green, showing just the handful of miners that are choosing to connect to each other on this other network, as well as connecting to the general Bitcoin network at large. In this example, I left the node's peers inside the diagram. You should get the point by now. They reject invalid blocks. That group of nodes inside the green circles are most definitely not the only set of nodes that matter in this network. Tweet by Stop and Decrypt. Bitcoin is an impenetrable fortress of validation. It doesn't matter if you created the transaction or block or if someone else sent it to you. If it's not valid, it's not getting in. All nodes enforce validation in tandem. Some people still don't seem to understand this concept. If you want to keep your Bitcoin safe, you can get yourself a cold card from CoinKite, and that's about as good as it gets. Get yourself a solid, reliable, Bitcoin-only, fully air-gapped, if you wish it to be, hardware wallet that will protect your keys, that will sign transactions entirely offline, and keep you from being vulnerable to malware, to hackers, to vulnerable exchanges that are holding it on your behalf. Don't do that. Get yourself a hardware wallet, and you can get a discount on the cold card with my discount code, Bitcoin Audible. And when you get your cold card or tap signer or whatever, I have both and I recommend them. Honestly, CoinKite just has a plethora of really awesome hardware devices to keep your Bitcoin secure and also to just be able to use them. I will just always and thoroughly recommend, this isn't even a paid for ad or a service or anything. I just love the Nunchuck wallet with it, and it's so easy to set up and use with NFC. I just love my setup. So if you haven't checked it out, the details, the links, everything will be right in the show notes. Get yourself a cold card and keep your Bitcoin safe. Trust me, you will avoid a lot of pain if you do. And that concludes Stop and Decrypt's Bitcoin miners beware, invalid blocks need not apply. I'm really glad Stop and Decrypt decided to pull this out as its own article because I think it really deserves it. It's a really important topic that, as mentioned in the article, a lot of people annoyingly seem to not understand what the purpose of validation is and what it means to be validating. Like if I'm validating with my node, I literally cannot receive your shitcoin or Bcash or Bitcoin Satoshi's Vision, any fork that is not adhering to the rules that I am agreeing to or the rules that I am validating by. And thus, every bit of the rest of the network that is doing that in tandem with me, for all intents and purposes, the fork that alters the rules or the block that creates an invalid transaction or attempts to steal coins that they don't own or attempts to mine coins that are not in the schedule don't exist. They just are not a part of the network at all. So it's like a built-in system of exile for anyone who even hints at breaking the rules or trying to modify the rules or suggesting that they're going to work under a different set of rules. We'll talk a little bit more about this in just a moment. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor and we'll come right back. Bentley has decided to join us because we're having a little bit of a summer thunderstorm here. And he's just a little bit nervous, aren't you, buddy? You say, hey, speak. No, I'm too nervous. Okay, I think Stop and Decrypt's article really hit this argument home, and you really have to ignore a lot of the core argument or the core understanding of how the actual network operates in order to believe that full nodes don't matter. And there's basically four major points that I kind of pulled out of this article that I think are the most critical. As far as the distinguishing or lack thereof between miners and full nodes and what it means when they're broadcasting or attempting to broadcast invalid information on the chain or on the network. So first is that miners are indistinguishable on the network. They look no different from any other node. There is no way to know that a miner has produced a block or been the source of a transaction. Every block that is relayed, every transaction that is relayed looks no different than if it was mined. So we don't know where it's come from, and that's by design and on purpose because we should never have to trust or care about where we got the information. That's the point of the Bitcoin system, is that we validate so that that's not even a concern. It's a decentralized system. Who knows where the information is going to come from? Maybe it's a node that's receiving Bitcoin transactions from satellite or blocks from a satellite or over radio across the Chinese border. We have no idea where they're going to come from, and the network is open. It's not permissioned. You don't have to ask to connect. So you have to validate, because literally anybody could be sending you any information. There are no restrictions on the joining of the Bitcoin network. These restrictions are entirely based in the validation rules. So someone who is violating those, you know, and you disconnect from that's the only way anything is judged in the network. That's it, is by validation. So I think that's really important to really get that, like grasp that concept, that no node is unique. Every single one of them is doing the exact same job, and that's really the point of it. Then next point was that every validator rejects any block or transaction that does not adhere perfectly to the requirements of the Bitcoin system. And that's right in line with the idea of how it can be decentralized is because we have an independent set of rules that everything is being validated against. So I don't have to care who you are. I don't have to care where your node is. It could be in China. It could be in America. It could be in the UK. Irrelevant. It could be on a Raspberry Pi. It could be on a Beast gaming machine. It could be in a server farm. Makes no difference. I validate the information and the hash. That's all I have to be concerned about. Outside of that, I've already proven that you're following the rules. I'm sorry, buddy. I know you're really nervous. The tundra's so bad. But I've already proven you're following the rules because I've judged the information you gave me, which is the only thing that matters. It's the only thing that matters in as long as the data being transferred is valid, then all else is good. Who cares where it came from? Who cares who sent it to me? It makes no difference. It's valid. It goes into the chain. And that's also key to its censorship resistance. If it treats one packet or one piece of information or one transaction as different from another, it's not censorship resistant anymore. It's not an independent system. That's what makes it open and permissionless, is that none of those other judgments matter. Only validation matters. Okay, so in third point, that there's nothing about mining that requires you to validate. In fact, most miners don't validate because they're part of a pool. And that's, I'm not 100% sure if it's most miners, because I think some miners who join pools maybe do run nodes, but I know that I didn't. Like, when you're actually connecting to a pool, it's not a requirement at all. Like, even when I mined way back in the day, I actually did join a pool for a short period of time, and it's literally you just log in and then you're mining. And I wasn't running a node or anything. I was just downloading the default software at the time to mine on my computer and, you know, giving it a shot. I was just seeing what happened, and none of it involved me running a node at all. So I would venture to bet, even though I don't think there's any real statistics on this, I would not feel unconfident at all about saying that the vast majority of the miners who join a mining pool are not running their own node. They are piggybacking. It's okay, buddy. They are piggybacking off of the pool's node and trusting that the pool is doing their validating for them. And that's the whole idea behind protocols like BetterHash, is to get away from that so that individual miners can run nodes and validate and choose which transactions they have. Because things like the Bcash 51% attack, where they rolled back two blocks, like, that's the sort of thing that is possible because they essentially abuse their position as the operator of all these individual miners. I mean, these were mining pools that rolled back two blocks without asking, or like just on a whim, utilizing all of these other people's miners that they did not own for their own purposes. And that's, I don't know, that's pretty dirty in my book. That's exactly the kind of thing that if we just eliminate those points of failures, well, then that won't be an issue. And BetterHash is one of those protocols that does that. It takes that centralized validation out of the hand of the pool so that all the individual miners, it re-decentralizes the mining pool without losing the benefit of pools mining. So, and then the last point was that it does not matter how much hash power you have. Bitcoin, like full validating nodes on Bitcoin, will never see or accept a block or a transaction from a forked coin or from a forked chain. If it has invalid rules or data, or it has a different set of restrictions that do not adhere to the Bitcoin rules, then it literally might as well not exist. It will get nowhere within that massive network of nodes. The information will not get in, the transactions will not get in, the blocks will not get in, it will not be added to the blockchain, nothing. It will essentially be the rules themselves are those which create the network. So you simply aren't part of the network unless you're using the same set of rules and same set of restrictions for your node, or for the generating of your transactions and blocks and all that good stuff. I don't know. That's so important to, like, I feel like I need to repeat that over and over and over again, is that the only thing that distinguishes a Bitcoin node from a non-Bitcoin node, or a Bitcoin transaction from a not Bitcoin transaction, is the restrictions that a node validates against. So, like, we could all have millions and millions of nodes, but the Bitcoin network is the network that validates to an explicit set of rules. So I can't, I don't know, it seems hard to believe that this is such a difficult concept to get. I guess it does make sense. It's just, it's frustrating. It really is sometimes. With that, I'm going to try to calm this dog down, and we will close this episode for today. This was the excerpt from the Sharding Centralizes Ethereum article, and now a standalone article. I'm glad I found this because I just knew I had this in audio somewhere. But now we've got it as a standalone episode, and I'm glad we did it. So, by Stop and Decrypt, gotta be following Stop and Decrypt on Hacker Noon, or on Medium, and obviously on Twitter. Always great stuff, so many great articles. And this one was Bitcoin Miners Beware, Invalid Blocks Need Not Apply. And if you have not seen the graphics, the graphics that Stop and Decrypt put together on this one really are just great at showing the relationship between the nodes. Like, it visualizes the whole thing and makes it really easy to understand. So I definitely encourage you to go check those out. They're really good aids to put this whole thing together in your mind. So I will link to that in the show notes. And of course, you can drop some major applause on this article as well for the awesome work per usual. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is
Bitcoin Audible
with Guy Swan, and that is me, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. So don't forget to subscribe to the show and check out all the hundreds of other works that we have now in audio on Bitcoin, decentralization, BitTorrent, and the crypto economy, just so many stuff from so many brilliant authors. This is the place where you can learn all of the most fascinating developments and ideas in this space. And that's why I am doing this. Thank you so much for listening. I love you guys. Don't forget to support the show if you want to be part of the exclusive Telegram group with the crypto economy crew. We got a fun little group in there, and I've been loving it. You can check that out on patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy and join in our little Telegram chat. So,
calm down, buddy, calm down.
Okay, let's get out of here. Until next time, take it easy, guys. run a Bitcoin node and use it. Me, I am saying that.